This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. Presented by Mosing Motor Cars. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
All right, gearheads. What a disappointing race for Haas. And
I can hear it in your voice.
I know, man. I'm sorry. I mean, just to go out that way with the pit stop problems. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah. I think they bought the NASCAR guns. So,
on an unrelated note, there's a position open for a mechanic on the Haas F1 website if you're interested.
Okay, yeah. That's true, right?
That's true.
Yeah, it was... I mean, there was a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about. But sadly, yes, you have to start there, which is the Americans failing, sadly, to finish the Australian Grand Prix. And yet, in pre-season testing and in the race weekend, 5th and 6th on the grid, let's take some solace out of that. Because, I mean, look at some of the things that went on with Red Bull and Ferrari over the years with pit stops. They're not the first team to have a problem like this. You can look at McLaren as well. I mean, come on.
I know, but it's just so disappointing to be, you know, fourth and fifth and just go out that way, and both of them going out the same way.
Yeah, that has to be an inquisition at this point. I mean, something definitely went wrong.
There has to be
something.
It wasn't just
else.
It wasn't just human error this time.
I have to wonder, you know, in that I go into thinking about the tools. Was there something up with the nut? Was there, you know, I don't know what else. I'm sure those tools are, you know, very calibrated. But, you know, the one thing I'll say is the wheels didn't come off. And so I wonder if the nut got on there and just wasn't torqued completely.
Well, you could see that the mechanics knew as soon as they left. And I think, I actually think it was rear left for Magnussen and front left for Grosjean. You could see by the reaction by the mechanics that you know, they just knew. And you said it yourself, you know, they went back in as soon as Grosjean left, they knew they'd got it wrong because they walked straight out.
Yeah, it was, when you were talking about when it happened, I thought they were going to stop the car because the mechanics, you could see, they knew it wasn't right. Why didn't somebody get in the radio in Grosjean's ear and say, don't leave? Because it looked like they knew before he left.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do. The thing is, I mean, you're talking about 2.3 seconds, less than 3 seconds cases.
I know.
And that is something that needs to be looked at. They do a lot of practice over the winter, Haas included, obviously, and they're all trying to do within 3 seconds. And it's pretty amazing when you consider just how quickly they do it. But really, the lollipop guy, or as we call it, the lollipop man, the guy at the front is the release man. And I heard Martin Brundle saying, at one point, you know, there's so many automatic devices that let these cars go, and so many indications to the driver that, you know, you could see that Grosjean just presumed everything was fine.
Yeah, and again, like you said, these are all happening within 3 seconds. It's hard to stop that process once you're lowering the car and moving, starting. Everybody's, you know, they're trained to keep going.
And let's, like you said, and let's face it, they were on for a potential podium.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That's. I mean, when they both go out that way, that's what's just making me crazy. All right. Well, there's some more to the race other than the Haas team going out. So we got to talk about that. But
hey, you know, the beginning. It started off great.
Yeah.
Everybody made turn one and turn two for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually did start off great. Did not get a bunch of, didn't get a pile up, didn't, I mean, no damage at the beginning of the race hardly. I don't think there was at all.
By the way, if you don't know your Twitter, you've got to follow fake Charlie Whiting. He's still brilliant as ever. He's just tweeted out, Toto, Alexa, why did Seb pass Lewis?
Yeah.
Yeah, computer errors. I love the way that Toto Wolff decided that it was a computer error.
Yeah.
Not Lewis actually not going perhaps as fast as Laris.
Yeah. You know, that brings up something we talked about a couple of weeks ago. There's fewer engines to be used this year. I think that came into play.
Oh, it did at the end. Yeah, no, I'm talking about listen, the race, what I'm getting at is the race was won and lost by a mistake by Mercedes.
Oh, yeah.
Way before that. Basically because of Grosjean's incident. That was how it was won and lost. And as Seb said, great strategy at the end there. But yeah, there's no question, and I think Lewis admitted it, that he got the gap down to 1.3 seconds, and then they said back off because they just didn't want to risk anything. I'm conflicted about, actually.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I do and I don't. I don't like it. I mean, I understand the intention is to kind of level up the teams and make it so it's not so crazy expensive for those that are barely making the grid. And keep them competitive with the other teams who could certainly spend a lot more money and have a lot more engines dialed in. The three engine limit, you're gonna have to reserve it some.
That's where it didn't happen on the very first race of the season and be a vital part of the outcome of the race.
I agree. I had almost rather see them maybe let the engine, you know, go five engines or four engines and for the season and maybe tighten up the limits on fuel.
I just don't like the idea of anybody in a position to win a race being throttling off, you know? I mean, it's not motor racing to me.
Yeah, let's listen to, we got the team radio queued up here for the Mercedes when they're telling Hamilton to coast. Let's hear that.
What's that? We need to have some lift and coast for PU temperatures.
Yeah.
So that's power unit temperatures. And that was earlier in the race. So it wasn't at the end of the race.
Yeah,
but clearly, you know, that's that's part of this now. This is part of the strategy. I mean, you heard Lewis saying, I'm going for it, when he did accelerate. And then they made that mistake and went off at nine. Onto the grass for a couple of moments there. And so it's still in the driver's hands. He can still kind of, you know, protest or ignore them. This is going to be the tale of 2018 a lot. I think power saving, conservativeness with the engines, like you say, with the power units, the temperatures in there. If there's any risk, you really cannot take that risk, especially if the champion, you know, if it's a close championship. So that's what Mercedes chose to do.
Right.
They made the mistake. They got behind Vettel, which they never intended to do. And then they said, okay, with four or five laps to go, nice one, Lewis, but we can't risk anything here. Settle for second.
Yeah,
live to battle another day, I think is what
they
said.
That's his exact words.
Yeah. Well, this is great for the championship. If Mercedes really is going to be as fast as it looks like with Vettel first and Raikkonen third, it's a lot of points. And, of course, Bottas down in eighth. So from a point standpoint, this is if we all want to see somebody other than Mercedes dominate the season, this is actually good news.
Yeah, it is. And there's no question that Ferrari, I mean, like I said, everybody's building their packages. We won't know the full potential of the 2018 field until I think, or traditionally, I think, Spain.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which also means that everybody's got their full bag of tools because they're back in Europe, because we're now going to Bahrain and China and so on. And, you know, Monaco is a lottery at the best of times. So that's where you can, and that's where also the new modifications, that's the usually the first upgrades, proper upgrades, if you need them, will go on. McLaren will improve. I have to say, of everything that happened today, and I know that it was by a little bit of hook by crook, as it were, in terms of a few people falling by the wayside, including Verstappen making a mistake, including Bottas not getting up there as far as he could. But let's give a round of applause to Alonso and McLaren. His best finish. He didn't finish higher than sixth last year. Fifth place for McLaren. That's good news for America's Zak Brown and the McLaren team as they, you know, try to get back that reputation that they lost dramatically in the last few years with Honda.
Sure, and, you know, Alonso hasn't had a lot of experience recently passing folks.
Yeah, he was happy.
And so, you know, I think that's there's something really to be said for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a team radio of that, though. Let's see if we can catch that one. Which one was it?
Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, he's...
It's very, very difficult to follow. So think about the strategy. Following is very difficult.
Yes, Fernando, so far there's only been one overtake, Bottas on Ocon.
So he was actually, you know, really paying attention to the other moves in the field as well as he was preparing himself. Like I said, it was difficult to follow. He was ready to go, but he was having a tough time getting around. But like I said, he hadn't had a lot of recent experience in passing.
Yeah. And he was at the end on the radio, I heard him saying that he was happy. They were very happy with the performance. And he said before the race, look, we're not the full complete package. We're still integrating the engine at the moment. And let's face it, they've had very little time. If anybody's had the most dramatic shakeup in the last year, it has to be McLaren. They've got a completely new power unit in the back of that car. Everybody else is developing. And of course, the other power unit has gone to Toro Rosso, and we saw what happened to them.
I was going
to
say, yeah. Don't you think there was a chuckle or two?
I'll bet there might have been, yeah. But I'm not chuckling. I you know, like I've said all along, Honda will be back, and maybe, just maybe, Toro Rosso will get the last laugh, because Honda will again be licking their wounds and going back to Japan, very embarrassed. That Gasly went out and it looked like it was an engine problem. Hartley did not have the kind of day that he is capable of, and work to do. But
and remember, they've got the same challenge that McLaren has right now. They're integrating a new power unit.
Yeah.
So but the smoke coming out of that obviously is what nobody at Honda wanted to see, or Toro Rosso.
No.
Oh, so what are the other stories, Jonathan, that caught your eye this evening?
This morning. Verstappen, I mean, you know, there was a couple of mistakes there. One by Hamilton, one by Verstappen, that were very significant. Raikkonen and Vettel did not make any mistakes, and hence first and third. Whereas Hamilton could, I think Mercedes for the first. I mean, well, they're so immaculate, the German team usually, with Hamilton able to turn on the flare at a moment's notice, and clearly today was ready to go. And I think he could, I think he proved that. Caught Vettel within seconds. But then again, you wonder whether Ferrari were not in saving mode, but we're also, I heard one radio incident to Ferrari saying, temperatures, PU temperatures, fine. So they weren't under any drama, but they also weren't maybe pushing as much as Hamilton, and that's how they won the war, so to speak.
Yeah, well, all right, guys, we want to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion and talk about all the different things down the grid. And again, this is why we race the races, because you never know what's going to happen. It was Bottas and everybody else. So you listen to Speed City live in Austin. Back up these messages.
Augusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MB Augusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MB Augusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome, and financing available. To Caddy Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Mosing Motor Cars is Texas's only authorized dealer for Superformance products. Superformance's Mark III is the only Cobra replica built under license from Carroll Shelby. There's no finer example of a Cobra around. Mosing and Superformance is your supplier for all the great race cars of history. The GT40, the Mark III Cobra, the Corvette Grand Sport, and the Shelby Cobra Daytona Coupe. Mosing Motor Cars, 2420 West Breaker Lane, online at mosingmotorcars.com. Superformance and Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done, or where you've done it, or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
You've made the right choice. Talk 1370.
Hi, Brendan Hartley. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
Welcome back to Speed City, here live in Austin. If you want to join the conversation, 512-643-LIVE, 512-643-5483, if you're still awake.
Well, just waking up. Well, could be a night shift.
I got a couple of stories I want to talk about. One, I want to talk Renault, because they looked really fast.
Yep.
Before that, I want to talk about Botas. What do you guys think about the
way... I don't think she'd get it done. Not right now.
Not Botox.
You look fine.
I was going, what is he talking about? Oh, Botox. No, Botas.
Right.
Coming through the field. And only ending at eighth. I mean, I'm thinking if that had been Hamilton, where would he be?
I don't know. I was disappointed, I must admit. And I expect, you know, if you remember at the front of the program, I said, you know, watch him come through, and he's a bit of a diamond geezer when it comes to overtaking. But I think Australia particularly, and the commentators said so, Julian and Jack were saying, you know, it is a very tough place to overtake, because it is 77% full throttle, as we were saying earlier. So, you know, you never really, there's not a lot of like classic, I mean, like I said, it's a street circuit. It's not like a classic, you know, Formula One setup where there's a long straight with a, you know, with a braking zone at the end, as Herman Tilke so often designs. So
maybe that's the problem. Valtteri is number 77. And it's 77%. Did he like play some funny math or something, or just not get there?
Ask Toto. He's full of math tonight.
There you go. He's full of something.
He's still scratching his head at the moment going, well, what happened?
Yeah.
I think that's going to take a while to figure out. But honestly, Valtteri, you know, had a bad off in Q3. And so I just don't think he ever recovered from that.
We did. I just had a tweet from the USA gymnastics team. Well impressed with that pirouette by Verstappen.
They that said was pretty cool.
They
actually
tried that a few times and not being able to pull it off, despite their gold medals. But that was pretty impressive. Great. He's got some great reactions.
Yeah, that was.
I'd have been halfway through Melbourne by then.
All right. I said I want to talk Renault. I mean, they're looking fast. They did in qualifying, and they obviously Hülkenberg finishing seventh in the race. I mean, look who's ahead of him, Verstappen and gang. So
it's a really important year for Renault too, because they are now Renault Formula One, and while they do have customer engines and some very important customer engines in Red Bull and in McLaren, who have, let's face it, dominated Red Bull the last decade in many ways, four titles. And McLaren, of course, have been probably the most successful team besides Ferrari in the history of the sport. So Renault have got, they're up against it in many ways, because, you know, you always kind of believe that the factory team will have the better, not so much the better engine, but, you know, they should be ahead of the game. It's their engine, and and the others are customers.
Well,
but
exactly. They've got the premium setup. They've got the knowledge. Yeah. They've dynoed it. Who knows how many hours.
But ironically, it's a small team that is coming back from really not having a budget anywhere close to McLaren or Red Bull in the last 5 years.
Is Renault French for Aprilia?
Ooh, ouch.
A little MotoGP.
I'll have you know the French
there.
Invented motorsport. They'll be very upset. How dare you? Sorry. Qu'est-ce que tu fais?
All righty.
Anyway, Jonathan, I got a question about the factory engines and customer engines.
Yes.
You know, because I always wonder about this for Haas with a Ferrari engine. You know, what, and you're 25 years in the sport, you know, what is the difference between those factory engines that the factories use versus the customer engines?
It's interesting you ask that because it's changed. There's no question back in the day when Renault were dominating with Williams, you know, in an era where they could not be stopped. They won, goodness knows how many championships, you know, when Mansell, Coulthard, when, you know, Renault were superior to everybody. And it was a fantastic allegiance. And back then, if anybody else had a customer engine, no way. It was a spec down, maybe two specs down.
Yeah.
And that was the norm, as it is in motorbike racing, as quite rightly points out.
That's what was inside. There was a hidden restrictor plate.
But as we all know, Haas's deal, for example, with Ferrari was to get the same spec engine, a 218 engine. Now, is that what's in the back of the Sauber? I doubt. So, you know, there is a little bit of that. So there's bound to be a sort of pecking order, and that goes with the deal you do. Now, in Haas's case, they've done a deal where they're getting the best spec Ferrari engine. But is it or isn't it? And who's developing it? It's you know, unless you're in the Italian factory making the engine, you know.
Okay, well, you know, you bring up something we haven't really gone into detail on, and let's see if you know it, Jonathan. So the top Ferrari engine as it's passed around to the different teams, when you get that, or when Ferrari delivers that, is it the same ignition system? Or, you know, how far down into the nuts and bolts of the system is it? Is the same ECM? Where does it stop? Do you have any idea there?
Yeah, of course not. And no one's going to tell you either. but, you know, you only have to look at the specs. You know, the Ferrari 062 Evo is exactly the same as the that Haas has. It's the exact same spec as the 062 Evo of Scuderia Ferrari. Now, what do, you know, Sahara Force India have? Their Mercedes power compared to, you know, what the factory have. Now, it says it's the same spec, but, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, you would presume therefore. But, of course, a lot of this depends on the chassis, because if you're designing an engine around your chassis, which is why I think Renault aren't quite there yet, is that they're almost in the same position, because even though Renault have now come to the fore, and they won last year, remember, they've gone through a fallow period of if you remember 2 years ago, Red Bull had enough of Renault. Didn't want him. Let's not speak of this car engine, Christian Horner was saying.
He said a lot more than that, too.
Yeah. So, you know, Renault have had to bounce back and work harder, and they have come good. Red Bull won last year. Not many, but they won, and the Renault route is capable of winning, and I think it's capable of winning with the factory team too. It swings and roundabouts, but you've got to presume that Mercedes and Ferrari have the best of their engines, and well, we'll see what Honda can do, but I do believe that they will push on and they will finally get it right.
Hey, I just saw Formula One tweeted out the driver of the day. Any guesses?
Sebastian Vettel.
I was going to go for Seb.
Fernando Alonso. Now remember, this is a fan-driven thing.
I was going to say, I think that may be a sympathy vote. I'm sorry.
Nah, it's just a popularity vote. Is more than anything. He had it's Fernando Alonso. He's hugely popular, and that's what.
Okay, now let's not approach the fan boost discussion.
I want to something I saw on Twitter. How good could a Verstappen been had he not pirouetted out of contention? Because he was fast. He was there. He was, you know, pushing on. So that's got to be, I mean, I think Red Bull can take away. I mean, there's a few things that obviously went wrong for Red Bull today, like the placing of Ricciardo going backwards and Verstappen getting into problems and losing a place at the start as well to Magnussen. That held him up for a while. If you remember, you heard the radio from Verstappen saying, hey, you know, or his engineer saying, hey, we don't need this. We need to get past Magnussen quickly. And the qualifying times prove that. He was faster than Magnussen, so...
Yeah, here's Hamilton, a quote from him, and talks about something you talked about, Jonathan. He says, congrats to Seb and Ferrari. They did the better job today. I had pace. I was able to apply some pressure at the end. It's an awesome circuit, but it's so hard to pass. So absolutely what you've been saying.
Yeah, I think that's the general takeaway. It is going to be interesting what goes on in this next 2 weeks before Bahrain, which is such a different Grand Prix. I do think we'll have a similar kind of battle, and I do think that Red Bull will be in that battle this time. I think the mistakes that they had and the problems they had belied what they may be capable of, and I think they're up there with Ferrari, if not there or thereabouts, you know?
Yep. I was watching the podiums. I love Kimi Räikkönen. You see Hamilton get up there and Vettel and everybody's fixing their hair and worrying and straightening their and Kimi Räikkönen just stand there with his sunglasses on and with his hair completely disaster. I love Kimi Räikkönen for that.
He's funny. You got to love him. and I do hope, as I said at the start, that I do hope that Kimi Räikkönen, after that qualifying form, because, you know, I always look at qualifying as being the obvious indicator of where everybody is. Anything can happen in a race, as it usually does. But Kimi was fast today and all weekend, and I hope that this will continue. And I hope he keeps the motivation and we see the best out of Kimi, because when he's at his best and he's got a comfortable car underneath him, one that he trusts, he's dynamite.
So one thing we haven't talked about at all, or at least since not at all in the post-race show here, is the halo.
The halo. Good.
When angels fly.
Yep. So,
well, now,
hopefully it's going to be a forgotten thing, right?
No, I don't think it's going to be forgotten. And that's because the reason I say that is today's race has, I think, less than 20 feet of elevation difference on that property. Yep. And so they didn't have the things that were called out that would really play into it. And when you consider the elevation, whether we're talking about T1 here, Al Rouge at Spa, some of the other tracks, there wasn't a lot of elevation to cope with. And so really they were primarily just dealing with the vertical axis, mm-hmm. not the horizontal that was raised.
Now they did do something here there at Melbourne, and that is have the second set of lights. You saw that? They had a second set
for
of
the
lights.
Halo, yeah.
That were lower and they were off to the side. And I thought, well, I wonder how that might affect, but obviously I don't think that affected much, but that plays into what you're saying, Les, is that there is a view that the halo blocks. So, hey guys, we need to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a lot about the Haas team and what went wrong. And if you want to join the conversation, 512-643-LIVE, we'll bring you on and hear what you have to say. You're listening to Speed City live in Austin, Texas, back after the break.
Racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road. Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe, on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done, or where you've done it, or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
Hey, this is Red Rocker Sammy Hagar. You are listening to Speed City. Woo!
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
That's who we need in the Haas team.
Hey, red rocker, red car out front today.
I can see it, man. I like it. Good work.
Yeah, and Sammy likes his Ferraris too, doesn't he?
He certainly does. Yeah, Sammy will be celebrating somewhere tonight.
You bet.
Probably still going, yeah.
In a speaking of.
Actually, Sammy might be listening 2:30 in the morning. You know?
Yeah, I never know. Maybe. Hey, when we went to break, I said we were going to talk about Haas. There's not much more to talk about. The only theory I have is that they brought the Stewart Haas wheel guns instead of the Formula 1s.
I think you might be right.
Because that's the only thing I can come up with. Well, Jonathan, you were just talking about something about Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, a lot of question. Well, no, I was actually going to go to the Twitter sphere for a second. Sebastian Vettel, I was just going to point out, Sebastian Vettel, third win in Australia and 100th podium for the four-time world champion. And of course, this season has been set up as a battle between Hamilton and Vettel, the two four-time world champions, the only ones with more championships than that. Of course, the great Fangio and, of course, Michael Schumacher with 7. One of the questions that quite a few of the fans have been asking on the Twitter sphere is no cameras in the halo for the driver's eye view. I think everybody kind of like a bit bummed that there's no driver's eye view. And the bottom line is, it was asked David Croft, the ESPN commentator and obviously the Sky Sports commentator. He basically said, the reason being that it makes the halo heavier and B, weakens the structure of the halo. So,
yeah, that's true.
But, you know, I did see some camera views over the helmet of the driver.
Yes.
I do like that because you can, you know, see.
As long as I can see the wheel.
See the perspective, see what they're doing on the wheel. We saw him. Yeah, bebopping around, punching buttons, looking for a new radio.
I was
going
to say he's definitely done some bebop practice, hasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah.
He was moving around that steering wheel.
Hey, I was watching a graphic somebody put up on Twitter, and it was talking about the request for Hamilton to go offline and go out of the line to cool his engines and tires, and it's really fascinating. I'm just watching this computational fluid dynamics chart showing the hot air, the turbulent air, but hot air also that comes from the car in front of you. A big deal. You know, he's trying to keep everything cool. That's why they ask him to do that, in case anybody had thought about that. But Jonathan, I wanted to ask you another thing about the way that this race was really won, and that was with the virtual safety car. So what do you think about the virtual safety car, the whole concept here? I mean, there's some people complaining, saying, hey, it's a safety car. Hey, the virtual safety car won tonight. It was a joke that it's there, but
How about a quick explanation of what's the difference between a real safety car and a virtual? So the virtual safety car, if you imagine cars are scattered all around the track making their laps, when the virtual safety car is implemented, what happens is they all slowly deaccelerate to a fixed speed for that track. And so they essentially maintain their spacing from them to the car in front of them and the car behind them. So that's what a virtual safety car is involved in, intended to minimally impact your place in the field, whereas a true safety car with the car deployed.
With Bernd Mailander.
Yes, he is.
He's very fast.
He is very fast.
7 seconds quicker, the actual safety
car
this
that?
Year. Yeah,
that's
supposedly.
Awesome. So the real one, the one you see go out with the lights on, that creates
when
a situation
do you choose
to group.
Choose to make the decision, because they did today,
yep.
When do you choose to make the decision to go from virtual to real safety car?
Well,
it
is made by the director based on the safety of whatever incident is causing an issue to be appraised. You know, is the car that stopped in a position that's unsafe? Is it only in that area? They take in a few items as they consider that. And so Charlie Whiting is one of the ones. And then, you know, we always have our guest safety person in as well, usually a former driver, that they all kind of make that decision at that point.
So what do you say, Jonathan? But the effect today... you know?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, in the end, it was strategy because Mercedes did not calculate properly. They should, first of all, they didn't tell Lewis that Vettel had come in. He was taken by surprise. If you remember, the first radio contact was Lewis saying, was I supposed to be pushing harder? Was I going too slow, was his question to the team.
Yeah, that's right.
And they said, no, you're sticking to the deltas. In other words, no, you did exactly what we asked you to do. But they didn't want to basically say over the radio and have a long conversation about it in front of all of us that they didn't calculate it properly. They thought they had enough space to get out past Vettel before he got in. But good work by, I mean, you know, smart, quick work by Ferrari, and they pulled it off. It was simple as that. Could Hamilton, as we said, maybe have challenged? Yes, but the risk was too much. That's what they chose not to do.
Yep. All right, so I want to play another clip from Team Radio. This is a really good one. This is Fernando Alonso. Let's play that, and then we'll talk about it.
Well done, guys. Very proud of you. Long winter, long seasons in the past, but now we can fight. We can fight.
Yes, mate, we'll bring it to them all season. Scenario one, please. Scenario one. And keep the revs low. Eric's hugging me.
I was going to say.
That's a bear hug from Eric Brulier, which would be pretty frightening, actually. But that actually gives you an indication of where McLaren are today. They are back to realizing. I mean, it's been a pretty rough place to be, yeah. Woking, England. Pretty grey place to be.
Desert where they've been.
Exactly. So, you know, hats off to them because Fernando has got his tail up. He stayed with the team, which was an interesting decision, let's face it. When we were at the Indy 500 last year, we were like, hey, you know, Fernando's not looking back. He's never going back there. And, of course, here he is a year on. And he is doing WEC, and he is going to be doing other things. But he seemed pretty happy today, and I think, you know, with both cars in the top 10, they've got the Renault engine they wanted, and they got a good result and a tidy result. More importantly, and as Fernando alluded to, long winter, worked hard. They've integrated the engine, but there's a long way to go. And they have come a long way from, like you say, six laps in Barcelona where right. The wheels fell off, quite literally.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And he's doing an entire season with WEC. You know, when I first read it, I thought, is he just going to do Le Mans? What's he going to do?
Nope.
Entire season. So if everything goes right, he could be a double world champion at the same time.
That's possible, yeah.
Theoretically?
Well, they're doing a super season WEC, so it's hard because they don't, you know, it's going to take two seasons for him to finish one season. But yeah, in theory.
All right, so what about some of the race, down the grid a little bit, some of the other teams, Jonathan? Any
down the road a little?
Down the road a piece.
Down the road a piece, Perez and Ocon finishing 11th and 12th, just out of the points. It was weird, the story, Carlos Sainz just getting the last points. A weird story about him feeling queasy.
Oh, yeah.
Coming on the radio saying that either what he was drinking in the drink bottle was making him sick, or I don't know whether the drink bottle had run out and he was just, you know, feeling...
Dehydrated
from it. But... Obviously, in fact, at one point, they told Perez to speed up a little bit or try to catch him because they thought that he might be limping a little bit home, but he held on, and that's an important point. And remember, Carlos Sainz, pretty much still new to the team. I mean, I know he drove for them last year, but, you know, he's still bedding himself in, and it's been a tumultuous time for him, too. Very much in the middle of all the Kvyat, Red Bull, stroke, Toro Rosso, you know what I mean? He's had an interesting time of it, and being compared to several drivers, it's never easy with Toro Rosso and Red Bull. But now he's got, you know, he's got the lend, as it were, to Renault, and we'll see. I rate him, I really do. I think he's a very determined young man and a very fast young man. Him and Ocon are two of the most exciting guys I've seen come out in the last few years, and I think Charles Leclerc, as he's called, will be just as exciting when he gets up to speed.
Yeah. So what about Melbourne as a place to start the season? From, you know, we talk about the lack of overtaking. It's difficult. I mean, I
well, that's what funny. I mean by it. It's not a good place to make a real comparison.
Yeah, that's where I was leading up to. Okay. I guess you kind of touched on that, but it's just. I mean, it's great. It's a tradition now. I don't know how long it's been. How long? I mean,
over 20 years. Yeah.
Well, it used to end there at one point.
It used to end in Adelaide. Yeah. Yeah. But Australia is a great venue for motor racing. They love racing. That crowd, I think it was 296,000 last year. It's right in the middle of the city. Even though you're in a park, you are downtown. I mean, I don't know if you've been to New York or Central Park. It's kind of like that in terms of its proximity to the city. Well, you saw the skyline. It's right there.
Yeah.
And there's hotels all around it. So it's easy to get to. They have a great tram system as well. So they bus people in and tram people in to the track. So there's not a parking problem. It's a great atmosphere around St. Kilda. There's restaurants and it's a lot of fun. So sounds it's a good place to go, but it's a long way to go. And from a tactical point of view and from the mechanic, I'm sure the mechanics hate it because you know, you get on the plane, your car gets on the plane. You can't carry a spare engine with you in your luggage. You know, think about that crash with Bottas. Yeah. A lot of work to do overnight. And it's not like, you know, you can't fly stuff into to Melbourne overnight.
Yeah. All righty. So you just made me think of something, you know. Hang on to the bouncing ball, folks. A big city.
Yeah.
Big park in the middle of it. Uh-huh. Lots of places to eat.
Uh-huh.
Transportation.
Yeah.
Dogs and cats living
Dogs
together.
Dogs and cats living together.
Portland.
Bill Murray reference.
I remember someone's saying that there needs to be a second American race that yes. they're after.
Yep.
How about Central Park? Go blasting around Strawberry Fields and breakfast at Tiffany's and, you know.
I like it.
How about something like that?
I think it'd be great.
Right in front of the plaza, make a loop through that's, there.
It's a done deal.
And it's so noisy in New York anyway. Nobody would know.
Blend in with the taxi cabs.
What was that?
That's funny. Nobody would know.
Nobody would know. In all seriousness, though, I think Miami's got a bigger chance. We heard Ross Brawn talking earlier about the fact that we're going to extend maybe to another venue next year. It doesn't necessarily. I mean, there's all sorts. There's Copenhagen. There's now they've just mentioned it. Assen, one of my favorite tracks in the world.
Oh, that's big with the motorcycle crowd.
Well, of course. And in fact, if they pull it off, so in other words, they've now got a Grand Prix commission. Charlie Whiting's been down there. He's had a look, likes it, says there's a few alterations to make, obviously, for Formula One, for runoff. But Assen could be the first ever track to have MotoGP, World Superbike, and Formula One.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's
nice.
Pretty wild, isn't it?
Yep. Hey, I noticed after the race, both Haas cars under investigation for unsafe release. I guess we knew that, but it's actually official.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of noise in that garage.
Gosh, I am
or it's deafening.
You guys saw me
quiet.
Bouncing off the walls here in the studio.
You're uncontrollable.
And then when that happened, I just, oh, man, I don't want to keep talking about it. In fact, you know what? I'm going to have to go to a break because I need some time.
You need some time away. We were having a timeout for John Massengale officially. His Botox didn't work for him, and he can't get the smile on his face again.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Speed City here in Austin in the middle of the night. We'll be back after these messages.
MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome, and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Mosing Motor Cars is Central Texas's source for classic performance cars. British, German, Italian, Japanese, and American. Ready for that special car you've always dreamed of? Mosing has you covered. Looking to sell a classic? Let Mosing handle all the details and get that special vehicle in the hands of the right buyer. Visit the showroom at 2420 West Breaker Lane or call 512-821-9491 or browse the garage online at mosingmotorcars.com. Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
Sound off on the news of the day with a talk poll.
Online at talk1370.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
Welcome back to Speed City.
We miss Felipe.
We do miss Felipe. I kind of miss that guy today.
Well, boys, I want to talk a little bit about, here we are sitting in Austin, Texas, the home of the United States Grand Prix in Formula One.
October.
Get your tickets. Get into Austin. You know, we're talking about great cities.
I'm going to say get here early.
Yeah, you know, there you go.
I know that, there is a lot of parallels between Melbourne and Austin. There really is.
I was thinking that earlier. You know, we have Adelaide as our sister city.
Yes, right.
But I was going to ask you that.
As a timbre, as a feeling, as a place to go and hang out, Melbourne and Austin, very, very similar. Both the temperature and kind of just the laissez-faire kind of fun place to be.
Keep it weird, Austin?
Well, yeah. Great bars, great nightlife in Melbourne. Good music, a lot of good bands now coming out of Melbourne. You know, it's got the same vibe. If you're looking for a Grand Prix to go to, there's no question that, and I know that a lot, everybody in the international community wants to come to Austin. I mean, to a man, to a woman.
Yeah, and we're not getting sponsored by the Austin Convention and Visitor Bureau. At least not yet.
What's that? Phone's ringing?
I love it.
There you go.
Not yet.
Also want to talk about what Speed City's going to be doing. You know, obviously we've been on the radio for 7 years in Austin and covering all the events at COTA, doing play-by-play out there. We've done play-by-play for Formula One out there for several years now.
We'll be doing MotoGP.
Yep, MotoGP. But for this year, obviously, we're now on before and after every race. And Jonathan, the people in between those shows, the BBC, you know all those guys over there.
Yeah, and I'm delighted that
Jolene Palmer. You know everybody in London, right?
yeah, Bob.
It's a small place.
Do you know Bob? If I had a penny for everybody that's asked me that question, yeah, I know Bob. It's great to have Jack Nicholls doing the commentary. He does the Formula E as well. He's been around for a while. He's still a young fellow, but a good commentator. And then now Jolyon Palmer coming straight from Renault. And obviously, it's a bit of a shame because Jolyon's a good driver. Jonathan, his father, runs several circuits. His brother races. But Jolyon's just a nice guy. And obviously, he's the closest you can get to a guy who's raced every man in this field, bar a couple of the new guys, you know?
Yeah, what a great resource to have somebody fresh out of the car like that.
Well, there is nobody that
he's
knows
the Tony Romo of...
Right.
One.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
But his back's in better nick. Yeah. Sorry, Tony.
Yeah. But you don't tell a lie.
Well, I'm a Cowboys fan.
Yeah. There you go. And of course, you know, Jonathan's obviously from London, but you've been in Austin now, 10 years?
Yep.
So, what your story was, you moved to Austin before you knew anything about the F1 track. Because when I met you, I naturally assumed, you came to Austin to follow the F1.
Yeah, I'm basically a human Labrador. I've been chasing bikes and cars most of my career. I haven't caught one yet. but mostly around the world. Yeah, you're right. I did World Superbikes for many years. I did Formula One, done MotoGP. And you're right. I've been going to somewhere like 22 countries a year for most of my youth. Settled in Austin, as did my parents, which is really nice. Love the city. My parents still loving it. Didn't they all build a circuit right where I needed to be?
Well, Les Kaiser's smiling over there because he's thinking the same thing I am, because we both remember the day that it was announced. I was like, quit poking fun at me. And then I started looking at the news. I was like, holy smokes, this is actually true. And this was in the morning. And when lunchtime came, I jumped in my car and drove out to where the Circuit of the Americas is now and was like, are you sure this is where this is going to be?
This isn't the same as Aquafest, then?
No.
The Austin Aquafest does not compare, but I remember driving out there. You know, the thing that really sticks in my mind, it was the condition of the roads and the soil out there. It's a disaster.
Scraping belly pans.
And I think that Bobby and crew at COTA didn't realize how far they were going to have to dig down to build the circuit out there to get through that.
Pretty impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, because the soil out there was a nightmare. And you have to just drive the parking lot of COTA, and you can't. You have to go down to 2 miles an hour because it's such a disaster out there. That was what I remember of that day.
Good
of
old farming dirt.
Yep. Good old black dirt out there. It was a disaster.
But Alloy, Texas is the center of the world come October.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the season. Obviously, with Melbourne being the what it is and not able to pass like we were talking about as much, maybe not the best way to test everything. But a lot of things that we had speculated on, like Haas being fast, Renault being fast, midfield being tight, I think all that's true, and that we are going to have competitive races between Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull.
Yeah, no question. And April is a good example. We are days away from April. We'll have three races in three completely different places in April. And like I said, by the time they come back to Spain in May, we will have a much better idea of how this is all going to shake out. Shanghai, Bahrain, two different circuits, but very interesting. Baku, and of course, Spain, then Monaco, Canada and France. France back on the calendar.
Yeah.
I'm really
That's
happy
been a
for
while.
That.
How but long?
It, whew, years. I can't think of how many years it is. But, in fact, he's never been to Paul Ricard. And that's a very interesting circuit, too. And, you know, that's going to be right in Renault's backyard.
You've been to that circuit?
Do you know I haven't? I know it. I've commentated from it. I've done Renault 3.5 races from there. And it's weird because it has the most weird runoff. So the runoff is all different colors and it slows the car. Sorry, it's all one color and it slows the cars down. It's a unique place for a motor racetrack. And when you see it, it'll freak you out a little bit because it's kind of like this big wide open space with a bit of gray in the middle. But it does work. I think you'll enjoy Paul Ricard. I think it's going to be interesting. And it's great to have France. The French are as passionate as the Brits and the Germans and the Italians on their motor racing, and well, they should be. All of the Renaults finishing in the top, or the Renault-engined cars finishing in the top 10 today? Pretty good.
Yep.
Going to earn some respect.
Hey, tell the producer my computer just rebooted.
Wow.
He warned me this was going to happen. He said, we normally don't use the computers this time
of night. Mine too.
Hey, but right before it rebooted, I did see...
Call Toto Wolff.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened.
It was a reboot, right?
Blame it on IT.
It's a Windows update.
That's
what it was.
Right before it rebooted, I did notice that they showed the fastest lap. Anybody, any guesses?
Ooh.
Tell me.
Daniel Ricciardo, 125.9.
Oh, nice.
And I think it was... I can't remember. 3 a.m. I can't remember. I think it was Kimi Räikkönen and Lewis Hamilton right after that.
Yep, no surprise. Also, just a quick mention, we've been talking about McLaren being back. Good to have an Austin company, Dell, involved with them this year.
Oh, yeah, that's really good to see that logo on that on the McLaren, on the orange, to see an Austin company.
Yep, no question.
All right, what else? Let's see. Les, what about your overall impression? I haven't gotten your good old Texas voice talking about this race?
You know, I think entertainment value was fantastic. Like I said, not happy with Haas winding up where they did. I'm sure that's going to be resolved. I'm sure somebody's really under scrutiny right now.
Oh, well, we didn't even talk about the guy running into the bathroom.
Yeah.
What it looked like.
That's what it looked like.
I don't really know where he went.
He just didn't want to be on camera, put it that way.
We're talking about the pit crew guy for Haas after they showed the debacle. I think it was actually the first one Magnussen.
Yeah, I might have gone in there and barfed. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine the stomach? You know, everybody's doing so well and that happens.
Yeah, that was a tough race. But I tell you what I would like to kind of straighten out. There's been a lot of Twitter sphere about it being a non-race because Vettel won the race under a safety car. The bottom line is that's absolute rubbish. He hadn't pitted. Strategy-wise, he'd stayed out. Smart move. And he was the last to pit. He got lucky that Grosjean... And there's also some conspiracy theories on... they're both Ferraris, so Grosjean... Yeah, right. So forget that one. But he won it fair and square on strategy. He didn't win it because of a virtual safety car or an actual safety car. He won it because he chose to come in the pits at the perfect time and stayed out longer than anybody else. It gave him that opportunity.
All right, well, we're about out of time, guys. I do want to talk about a little bit more housekeeping. Is talking about, so what we're going to do on Sunday race days, for Formula One race days, we're going to have this same show that's a post-race show that's in the middle of the night like this. We're going to have those replayed on our Sunday night show in Austin. And then on non-F1 race weekends, we'll have our regular Sunday show where we talk everything from Formula One, IndyCar, MotoG, WEC, MotoGP, WEC, and more.
All things fast.
Yep. And, of course, go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. We keep lots of content up there. Not everything makes it onto the radio show. We keep a lot of interviews up on SoundCloud, including the full Russ Braun interview that you heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Bits and pieces. That's like a 12, 15-minute interview, isn't
it? Yep, and I've got some stuff coming with Kevin Schwantz, too, talking about MotoGP. So, yep.
Yeah, if you like MotoGP, check out last week's show on our website because world champion Kevin Schwantz was in the studio with us here in Austin.
Another little old Austinite.
Yep, and so, yeah. And, of course, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We don't do too many other socials like Instagram and others that well yet, but we're really good on Facebook.
Well, Les is on Snapchat, of course, you know.
Snapface or whatever it's called. All right. What other housekeeping, anything else? You can download our app on the Apple Store and on the Google Play Store, and we keep lots of content up there.
Congratulations to Sebastian Vettel. What can you say? Ferrari have struck first blood here in the Australian Grand Prix, and it's come at high time. And I'm afraid that a little bit of embarrassment maybe by Mercedes. They didn't get it right today, but
oops.
It's going to be a good battle between the two four-time world champions.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to Speed City tonight. We really appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao, y'all.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You know Graybar for electrical parts, but there's one more thing you may not be thinking of us for that can help maximize your next project's total value. Our pre-project planning services are designed to help you win the bid, save on labor costs, and keep your installers productive across your entire build. The sooner you call us, the better. Because when we're there from the beginning, we can anticipate your needs and help you solve problems before they become problems. Yep, Graybar does that.